Manifested live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
We continue our political season and we are really focusing on the province of Gauteng and all of those who are hoping to lead this province. We've just spoken to DA Solim Sumanga and thank you very much for calling in. You can still pick up that call 086-00-00-959 and you can also send an X as well, by the way. And we are now speaking to Abel Dau, who we've spoken to before when he formed his political formation, and we had a broad conversation about what the national offering is. We just wanted to make sure that we now focus on the province, yeah, because the province's issues are also very unique to the province. Just on the sidebar, as Solim Sengamanga went out, he said, no, Abel Dau also knows. He was there. We all drank the water together. So he can verify that, you know, we had done our bit. Is that true?
That is true, Pimela.
You had a footage of you drinking water too.
Thank you so much for having
You're
me,
welcome.
Pimela, and good evening to listeners at home. No, it's true. You know, I always say I'm probably one of the few people who's done enough to ameliorate the water situation in Hammanskraal. And I believe that we are getting it right.
Look, here's my quick position on the Hammanskraal thing, because I think Hammanskraal is going to be and will always be a political football.
Sure.
And I think we must accept that.
Mm.
And the problem here is, for those who want to be throwing mud on the Hammanskraal issue, it's disingenuous,
sure,
to be quite honest,
sure,
because actually there were many hands in that cookie jar.
Mm.
And so no one can dissolve and resolve, no one can absolve themselves of their responsibility when it comes to Hammanskraal, from national to provincial to municipal, especially the different political parties too. So I think it's unfair. We would have to really go through an entire timeline,
sure,
to say, no, it's this particular party and this. No, actually, the issue of Hammanskraal was ongoing for a very long time. And that was in the midst of many different administrations,
mm-hmm,
and even national departments, which came in and out at different points. So I think it's only fair that you would have to specifically pick a specific time to say, Mugetakete, what did you do when it came to this? But I think, quite broadly speaking, we know that there's a case right now that is being investigated, which is a criminal case. But I think to point a political finger at one party is a little bit disingenuous. That's just my little two cents worth.
It is, but not necessarily, Pimela. You see, when you are becoming an incumbent, Larry, you are a successor in law. So all the problems that you inherit, you need to be able to resolve. And Hammanskraal coming in 2016, we knew there was a problem that was coming from as far back as 2004, and we needed to do something. And as an MMC, I know what we did to ameliorate. And if I can just have a 3 cents, because we're going to talk.
No, it's important that you address it in your way,
yeah,
because, I mean, you are now somebody who's hopeful to come in at a provincial level. In the end, unfortunately, you have over a decade where people in Hammanskraal bear the brunt.
Absolutely.
of mudslinging, politicking, corruption, and the works. So you can definitely speak about your era. I'm just saying, you cannot pick only one portion and one particular, you know, 4-3 years of a time. The Hammanskraal issue, I think everyone can bury their heads in shame about either looking the other way or not doing their bit, because unfortunately too many people were responsible for what happened to Hammanskraal.
Absolutely. But again, I would say we should have resolved the issue of Hammanskraal.
Yes.
Now, let me tell you something. Tshwane has 14 wastewater treatment works.
Yes.
Basically, two are functional.
Yeah.
Now, out of the two, that there's 12 that are dysfunctional.
Mm.
And everyone in Tshwane gets water that is of drinkable quality. Therefore, we must be able to then say, what are we doing differently in Hammanskraal compared to what we do elsewhere? I mean, Sunderland Ridge discharges the same substandard quality effluent just as Royval does. But the problem and the difference is that the people who are in Centurion and that part of the world are getting a supply from rainwater from the rainwater
That's
supply,
true, yeah.
which we should be doing for people of Hammanskraal. If we were serious about resolving the
That's
problem,
true. That's a very fair comment.
We would have extended. There's a pipeline that runs from Block Didi in Soshanguve all the way to what we call Riefenzen now, which was Stingvat there. If we were to build a reservoir there and put a pump station there and then pump water into the two reservoirs that we had built in Hammanskraal, we should then be able to give people of Hammanskraal the same quality of water as the person in Harsfontein. But there is no political will to do that, number one, because then the water tankers business is going to run out of business and therefore we are going to have problems. So the problems in Hammanskraal are man-made and there's no willingness to resolve them. But let me also tell you, in terms of you know, the master plan, when we needed to have expanded the plant in Royval, where the problem is, number one, it's over capacity. It's running now at 160 megaliters every day of effluent that it receives, when it was designed to run at 120. I'm just going to run on the technical stuff quickly. Now you've got your digesters not working, aeration doesn't work. And when I took over, we didn't even have a permanent plant manager. Now, when you have a dysfunctional plant, you need accountability. You need someone who will take responsibility for making sure that at least it works optimally. We didn't even have an artisan. When across the road from where we were, there is Royval Power Stations, where there were artisans who were sitting doing nothing every day. And what we did was just to second them in there and make sure that they can keep the pump you know, working optimally. I mean, you have maturation ponds that would have to trap, you know, the effluent should the plant be dysfunctional. They were saturated. There was no dredging that was done, and that's what we did. So there wasn't rocket science. We started bringing back maintenance, and we started making sure that we are dealing with the problems in Hammanskraal. And what is said is we had a plan to make sure that we can be able to reverse and or at least optimally use the plant optimally. There was something that we did with the team. We had a two-stage purification system that we did. So there's an old purification plant in Temba, and there's a new plant that we built, state-of-the-art with GAC, granular activated carbon and ozone and all of those things. What we did was we would feed the water when the plant is working optimally on the other side into the old plant, and we had a tie-in that would then take the same water that has been purified, tie into the second plant, and would put it through and then dilute it using the water that we are getting from Klepdrift, which was about 34 megaliters. Hammanskraal needs about 57 megaliters of water. And we were able to know that we could actually have people drink that water and not be affected. But they did not have to be exposed for prolonged times. And that was an intermediate measure when we did a permanent measure. Unfortunately, politics came into being. I can tell you now, Pamela, sitting here, that when we went to Royval to go and introduce the contractor that was appointed, which eventually happened to be Blackhead and their consortium, I was the MMC, and a whistleblower actually came through and said to us, there's a problem here. Upon hearing that we did our oversight, I cancelled that contract. And guess what? We went into administration, then the company went to court, the city did not defend my decision, which was correct. 340 million rands later, we cancelled the contract and we are crying foul. This is what happens when people don't take responsibility of what they should be doing. And that's the problem with our politics here in the province. It boils down to politicians jostling for power and playing politics, and eventually people die. We have got 23 people who died in Hammanskraal because politicians are playing politics. And that's the sad story of Hammanskraal. But it's true everywhere. You have a similar situation with water in Bronger Spray, which is precipitating and is going to be a problem. They stayed for 3 months not so long ago without a situation, without water, and you are going to have similar problems. When the corollary cholera outbreak came up about. It was when the city of Tshwane was not paying contractors that are delivering water, and the community was forced to drink that water
from the tap,
and that is how we got to the problem that we are. So that's where we need to put culpability where it belongs, that politicians have failed the people of Hammanskraal as they do the many other communities in this province.
So what's your solution?
My solution is very simple. I think at the provincial level, we have a responsibility through COCTA to hold these municipalities to account. I've worked extensively in local government, and I can tell you now that the province is not doing what it's supposed to do. In fact, even the Department of Water and Sanitation is not doing what it's supposed to do, because it should have been long that they have had an intervention. Like I say, why not extend the pipeline from Riefense all the way to Hammanskraal, give people clean drinkable water, and then deal with Rooival and everything else? But they are not prepared to do that, because then the tanker business is going to die, and that's where the problem is.
Here's the problem. You have experience,
yes,
in local municipality, and you know what it's like to jostle, as you're saying.
Sure.
You know, political parties jostling for positions and power and so on. And you are saying the city did not support a decision that you made, which ultimately finds us here.
Sure.
In this election, you are also likely to find yourself in a coalition in the province. We haven't seen it before, but it's likely to happen.
Yeah.
How are you going to manage these very same traits that politicians have when it comes to working together, jostling for position, corruption and all of that, and make sure that service delivery still remains a key element of what drives everybody when you have the experience of how politicians function?
Look, Pamela, I think there is definitely a conscious and an unequivocal stance that we must take as individuals to say we are not going to coexist with corruption. When I came in this term...
Can I pause you there?
Yeah.
I have not heard a single politician come here and say I'm for corruption.
Mm.
Nobody. Nobody admits that I'm here to corrupt. But we know it happens, right?
Yeah.
And that's the difficulty here, that as much as everybody says corruption is a problem, I'm not for corruption, we know that's not true. We know that in the end, in reality, you are going to have to deal with corrupt colleagues, maybe yourself, maybe one of those people implicated. And I'm not saying that you are going to be, but I'm saying that the system and the people that you would have to collaborate with may have different agendas.
But, Pamela, you know, the good book says, by their fruits they shall be known. You see, it's not what we say we are, but people must judge us by our actions. And therefore, you look at somebody's track record. You know, in this term alone, I actually, when I was an MMC for housing, I sat in the executive, and I flagged a deal that was corrupt to the core, when the previous mayor had instructed officials in the city of Tshwane that they must give a tender for some whatever power stations to their friends. And you can go on record, I said it must be known that I voted against us taking this report to council. It landed in what they call the coalition oversight group. Those are facts that you stand up, even if you have to stand alone. I stood alone in that executive and I said I'm not going to turn a blind eye into this practice. And that's what we need to do. So South Africans who are upstanding and are willing to stand for what is correct are still there. And that's the reason why we are not willing to give up on our country and give up on the space that we find ourselves in politics, to say we must go in there and fight the good fight. And I do believe that it's about time that the good guys win, because South Africans, the more we fight this scourge, South Africans are actually getting tired, and there's more who are coming to support those who are saying enough is enough, because truly corruption has taken us back, and we really need to stand up and say we are not going to allow and be coerced into coexisting with corruption. And we really also need to go on to say we need to ensure that we professionalize the public service, so that officials are not beholden to politicians and they can actually say this is wrong and I'm not going to do it, you'd rather fire me. But we've created a state where it is so difficult to stand on principle and what is correct, because when you find yourself outside, then it can squeeze you to your personal life that you cannot move forward. And that is the reality which we are facing. But I think that South Africans have a great opportunity and a unique opportunity opportunities, because these coalitions have created for us an environment where now there's no absolute power, because absolute power corrupts, and we've seen with our country, and therefore we really need to see more and more people saying we are not going to give absolute power to one, but we are going to ensure that power is shared amongst people who are upstanding. And when that happens, we must make sure that principle becomes the guiding light that ensures that who we work with is principled, and it is on the basis that we want to achieve for South Africans. And I think we are there.
So with the scenario that you've painted, that the likelihood is that you're going to have to share power,
sure,
with that scenario, and with the fact that you may be given the mandate, what would be your priority? What would you like to achieve yourself in the next 5 years?
Look, there's a few basics that we must get right in Gauteng. Number one, in education, I think I've been on record to say I think this online registration thing of Banyaza is a very big problem. If I were to wake up being the premier of this province after the 29th, I can tell you that's the first thing I'm going to scrap.
So you'd go back to manual?
Yes, absolutely. Not necessarily manual.
Centrally or to the schools?
To the schools. And then it is monitored centrally. So you would have a system like it always has, where the department knows how many places we have in each individual schools.
Mm-hmm.
It is centralized. So Pimelo can go into a system and see, okay, Padi Sahwa has 3 places. Let me go and look for space for my kid.
Okay, so would it be like a hybrid model?
It would be a hybrid model,
okay,
that puts power in the hands of the parents. Because what happens from that point is that you then get to choose the school your child goes to,
mm-hmm,
and you get to be sure that the child has a school. Placement is done immediately, but also it creates a relationship between the parent and the school, is what we have missing in this province right now. Because you get to go and apply, and then you get given a school somewhere, and then you get to send the school in a transport somewhere, and there is no relationship between the school and the parent, and problem starts there.
And fair enough. The thing about it is that we all want school X. All 100 of us want school X because we love our children, we want the best for our children, right? But the school X can only accommodate 20.
Yeah.
What then?
Then school Y is what you have in the system as a possible option, and school Z, and then you as a parent are going to say, look, I have school Y and school Z.
Mm.
Between the two, school Z is better.
Mm.
But when you have a situation where you then get to be forced school Y, you are going to be detached with school Y, and the child and the teachers would see
but it's the same thing to
their own devices. No, it's not.
What we have the 3 options now,
yes,
right? You've got option one, option two, and the last.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. If you are not the first in line on the day, you'd be kicked. You will have to then to go to option 2 and then option 3. Is
but
that not the same thing?
What you do is it's not, because
yeah,
you would actually have to physically be able to identify and locate that school. And that level of involvement with the parent has been proven to be able to then jack up the school, because you know the kind of school that your child goes into, and then the involvement starts from there. I have been a member of the SGBs when my kids were going to the different public schools that they've been. And I have seen that when more of us actually go and become part of these schools and get involved, it improves. In fact, it is to the benefit of that child who is leading a childhood at home, because an adult whose child is in that school and actually can push the teachers and play oversight on the system. So it is to our benefit in the long run. But yes, that is not the total solution.
Mm.
Obviously, we must have a holistic solution to look at our education and say, one, let's bring back teacher training colleges. Because when you do that, you are able first to source the best amongst your former teachers and those who've got experience to train those who are coming into the system.
Well,
and in so doing, you transfer the much-needed skill for them to be able to then be able to do their work as they're supposed to, which is not the case right now in the current regime that you are currently having.
Let's take it step by step so that I can follow. So the SGB situation,
you
can't fix that. I mean, we are in a situation, and I'm not sure it's a political party thing. I think society has just become what society has become. You tell me how many parents actually care, and parents choose a school, But communities are not involved. You know this. You know, communities leave it to one Abotau and one Pimelo here and the three there. And actually, you know, parents sometimes are either absent, either it's unrealistic, or they just don't care. And you may have many different factors to why parents are involved or not involved. So what I'm saying is that involvement, we have to have another conversation, because you know it's bigger than the political party solution.
But the politics of the SGB as well, it's a conversation we need to have.
Yes.
In different schools, you've got someone who's been a chairperson for 20 years.
They don't,
they don't even have a child in that school, Melo, but they are a chairperson. We can go to schools tomorrow and get chairperson who doesn't even have a child in that school. And they feed into this political system.
True.
So true, there is a problem. But you see, when these things happen, because when we politicians polarize these spaces, we create a detachment from those parents who really want to play a part. And then they just get despondent and they go look for a private school somewhere and put their kid, if they can afford that, and walk away. And that's where the problem is. But if we really go head on, if I was to run this province, we really need to look at, to relook at the powers of the SGBs. I mean, I was telling people to say, I sat in an interview where we were appointing a principal, and when I was scoring this person, they were not the best that I scored, and I can tell you they got the job because it was fixed. And I couldn't believe,
because people take pride.
Yeah, and people have to look after their own comrades, and you know, they you scratch my back, I scratch your back. That's where the problem with the country is.
Okay, and then we were addressing very quickly the issue of the colleges. What is the college going to do different to what we already have in the universities, in the TVET colleges?
You know, Pamela, when you go to university, those students who are studying to become teachers, who are doing education, they're not working with their big books, you know, showing off in the campus and everything. In fact, it probably is the last whatever choice that they do, if everything else fails. I'm honest with you. And therefore, you do not have the best of the best having pride in going into teaching. But when you take them to a college, you put like people into a space where you can absolutely train them, and you then get to have them into a standard that is universal, and you raise them together. You you impart a skill that is almost universal. And it's the same when it comes to some of these things where you have to have that kind of involvement. You want to be able to then bring it to that level. Unfortunately, that's not what you have in these mixed spaces.
What is going to change? Because if a person that chooses to go to a teacher's college goes there anyway because they couldn't qualify to go into university, you say you have the same problem. It wasn't their first choice. Same problem. Why they end up in a college is the same reason why that was their last choice in the university. How is that different?
That is different, because when you have that same problem, but you have this person around a lot of other people who probably this is their first choice, they get to be...
How would you know? I'm saying is, how do we know? Because you're not going to have everyone say, I'm here because it's my last choice or my first choice. Or Oksalai, they're here. Like in the university.
Absolutely. But the point I'm trying to make, I am a trained, qualified diesel electrical fitter.
Yes.
I was trained by the then Spornet.
Yes.
In a Spornet training college.
And you feel that a space separate from the big campus is better.
Yes. That space allowed us, we were like-minded. Okay. You even learn the culture of what an artisan should be like. The same as what you do with your nurses.
Yeah.
Because they go to nursing colleges, there's a culture that is transferred from this generation to that generation to that. Even when this was not something you're passionate about, you actually learn to love this environment or it spits you out. I mean, it's that simple. And I think that is the difference that that would make. But also, you would then tap into the kind of experience and expertise that you have from former teachers that then don't get to go and train these other teachers who are upcoming. And one of the things that you benefit from when that happens is that you don't have to make the new teachers and the incoming teachers don't have to learn by making the mistakes that the older generation have made. They get to learn to say, this is how the ropes, you know, to pull the ropes. And that's the advantage you'd have.
And one, I'm so sorry, we've run out of time. In 1 minute, I want you to tell me how you would fix the health sector in Gauteng.
Look, in 1 minute, the health sector in Gauteng, one, we are overburdened.
Everyone comes here.
Absolutely. And I have proposed an 80-20 rule, straight up. 80% of bed capacity and response should be reserved for South Africans, first and foremost. I don't think that this thing is sustainable of saying, let's just have queues. You can call me that I'm trying to look at a solution that reintroduces segregation, but I'd rather have a situation where we are going to be very clear that you are going to service four South Africans than one foreign national who's whatever, and four South Africans, and you can call it whatever, because when you have a healthier nation that can go back and work for you and assist in bringing tax revenue into the country, you are able to respond to other areas.
How are you going to detect illegal foreign nationals who have IED books? How are you going to do that? Because they would have the right documentation and may still be illegal. You, by the time that person comes onto the queue, you wouldn't have solved that problem.
No, absolutely. If that's that, we are not calling for racial profiling of any sort. Mm-hmm. If someone proves that they are South African, unfortunately, the problem is much deeper and it has to be dealt with where it belongs. Mm. But then you would be dealing with a different problem. Mm. What I am talking to is us, in fact, knowing that we are having 80% bed capacity, you know, in maternity wards, when we go through December to go and greet Christmas babies, 80-90% of those babies are not even from South African women, and those mothers are here illegally, and that is not even rocket. It is obvious, it is there, and therefore that is how you deal with it. The other part, definitely, we are not going to breed a nation of xenophobes, of people who want to profile people racially and all of those things, but we are saying, let's breed a nation that's patriotic, that would put South Africans first and ensure that our people get to feel like this is their country, like it is everywhere else. When you go to Europe, as you travel, you do not go through the same gate as Europeans do. You have your gate and you'll queue for 30 minutes and they'll walk through the gate swiftly because it's home. They must be made to feel like they're home. And why are we expected to do things differently?
I really appreciate you coming in. Thank you very, very much. All the best to you and your new formation. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much, Pimela.
That's Abel Dow.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.